So if I would talk about a Myers-Briggs, how many of you would know what I'm talking about? A number? Okay, how about a disc? Certainly should have some farmers there. The Enneagram. Clifton Strengths. Working Genius. So we have some farm equipment and some other things. What are these? Giftings measurements. So when I first started getting into some organizational development work, one of the first things you bump up against when you start working with people and organizations and human systems is the realization that not everybody is the same. And I wasn't quite sure what to do with that, but then I started realizing, you know, other people have noticed this before me, actually, and have done work on this. And there's this thing called like giftings analysis, personality analysis, temperament assessments. And I thought, well, that's cool. And I started reading about them, and there are all kinds of different ways to make sense of who we are and how we show up to the world. And I thought, well, that's cool. You know, I wonder who I want to be. So I went to 16personalities.com, which is loosely based on a Myers-Briggs assessment. And I started scrolling through, and I came across the personality type they called the executive. I, you know, when the hubris gets the best of me, I can sort of fancy myself that. And I thought, well, maybe I want to be an executive. ESTJ. Sounds good. So I started reading about the executives, the ESTJs. And according to 16personalities.com, they say ESTJs are classic images of model citizens. They help their neighbors, they uphold the law, and try to make sure that everyone participates in the communities and organizations that they hold so dear. I thought, well, I think I could do that. I think I do want to be an executive. And I kept reading several paragraphs down. Says, people with the ESTJ personality type are dedicated individuals who pride themselves on always finishing what they start, rendering them reliable and trustworthy. I'm out. You know, so I had to find something else. Again, there are all of these different ways to make sense of who we are. And how we show up in the world. So if it's not as simple as reading through the menu and saying, I'd like one of those, please, like, how does it work? Like, how do these different instruments work? What? Tell me about it. Have any of you taken any of these? I mean, you knew what they were. So how do they work? You answer a bunch of questions. What does that do?
Categorizes you with others with similar answers.
So somebody a lot smarter than I am has gone to the trouble to figure out if we ask these questions based on how people answer, we can kind of figure out patterns and systems that can help us give vocabulary to how these people might show up in the world. So rather than just choosing who I wanted to be, I've taken some of these assessments, and I went through, and on the Myers-Briggs, I discovered instead of an ESTJ, which looked kind of cool until I got to that follow-through part, according to my assessment results, I'm actually an ENFP. Okay, so what's an ENFP? So I read the description of how an ENFP might show up in the world. And I thought, who are you and how did you get in my head? It was creepy. Based on answering these questions, you know, I read about myself. And it was weird and kind of fun. Because I actually kind of liked learning about myself. You know, I have a friend who does organizational development work for a department of the state of Kansas, about 2,500 employees, and we've done some training together. We work together occasionally, and we were meeting over coffee a couple of months ago, and he said, you know, I've started using these Clifton Strengths assessments as kind of an opening. When I'm working with a new group of employees, I have them take the Clifton Strengths Finder, and we go from there. And he said, they're like crack. People love learning about themselves. How we do? You know, we are kind of curious about ourselves. So now I know on the Myers-Briggs, I'm an ENFP. According to the Enneagram, I'm a 7 with a side wing of buffalo sauce. The working genius, I'm an IDWGET. So what? Right? And there are ways in which learning about ourselves is really arrogant and self-focused. Right? And there's also a risk of, was it Ellis? What did you say these assessments do?
Can categorize you with others.
Yeah. So here's my box. Right? Now I know what box I'm supposed to fit in. And don't ever ask me to step outside of that, please. If your life works that way, I'm interested in knowing how, because mine doesn't. So what's the point? I think that Paul, long before many of these books were written, also gave some thought to why people are created differently. And he talks in 1 Corinthians 12 about the different gifts, how there are some apostles and some teachers and prophets, and he lists a lot of different things that people might do because they're gifted in those things, because they've been given a gift that they then share with other people. And a little bit later in that passage, he talks about how there are different parts of the body, how there are the eyes and the arms and the feet, and how it just wouldn't work very well if we all want to do the same things. So, I really think that it's pretty clear from Scripture and from experience that God has created us differently for good reason. And maybe even if he has created us differently for good reason, we honor him when we think about how we use who he has created us to be. Now, we certainly shouldn't think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. And that is a risk of becoming too focused on who God has created me to be or who we think God has created me to be. So that's a risk. And I believe that he is honored when we honor who he has created us to be. And we don't all get the luxury of only doing the things that we like doing and that give us warm fuzzies. So there are some of these competing tensions of how do I serve most effectively? What is the best version of myself, right? Who has God created me to be? And the work needs to be done, and somebody's got to do it, right? So somewhere in all of those competing values, I think there's some wisdom to be found. And I'm looking forward to hearing from a number of different people, not necessarily that have figured all of this out, but that are going to be sharing their perspectives from their specific vocation and perspective. So we don't all spend our time exactly the same ways. And hopefully there is meaning and purpose in ways that we all spend our time. So the instructions that the speakers were given, or some prompts that they could work with were share with the group how you think about vocation and purpose and how you see your current vocation as being purposeful and fulfilling. Some questions that might that we might wrestle with: what is the role of joy in the work itself? What is the role of gifting and natural or developed ability? What is the role of sacrifice in vocation? What is the role of financial compensation in choosing vocational path? Why do we talk about work-life balance as if work and life are separate realities that must be carefully balanced so as not to get too much work or too much life? And we offered bonus points. I don't know how we deliver these, but bonus points for sharing struggles you may have had or have with finding peace or fulfillment in your vocational journey and how you've navigated or are navigating those challenges. So I'm looking forward to hearing from Marvin and Marietta tonight. Very loosely, the boxes here are Marvin will be talking about vocation as a business person, kind of in the for-profit business world. Marietta will be sharing her perspective from somebody in full-time ministry. And we hope to hear from people about preaching and teaching and motherhood in future evenings. So really looking forward to some of these sessions. In the meantime, I would like to take some prayer requests and spend a little bit of time in prayer before we continue with the rest of our evening. What prayer requests do you have? Neil and Naomi. Hands of Christ is sponsoring a prayer walk Monday evening and ask for the Lord's direction and spirit. Christians, National Christians in Indonesia, to gather with and work with Matthew and Andrea and Levi and Angie and their families. Ongoing and escalating violence in Kyiv.
With buildings collapsed, did that crush people?
Yeah, there were people trapped.
Where was Brother Irvin and his family that gave this answer?
Sorry, I forgot to repeat these for the benefit of people watching. Bertha's brother, Urban, navigating a journey with cancer, and the victims of the Myanmar earthquake. Sorry, what was that?
Arthur and Lil.
All right, I'll read over this list again. I think we'll spend several minutes just gathering in small groups. John, if you could be prepared to lead a song then in about 4 or 5 minutes. Neil and Naomi, the Hands of Christ prayer walk scheduled for Monday, asking for the Lord's direction and spirit. National Christians in Indonesia together with Matthew and Andrea and Levi and Angie. The escalating violence and loss of life in Kyiv, Ukraine. Bertha's brother Irvin and his journey with cancer. Victims of the Myanmar earthquake, and Arthur and Lil. Let's gather in small groups, and we'll reassemble in about 5 minutes. Are there any announcements that should be made? All right. If there aren't any, we'll look forward to hearing from Marietta as she shares about her perspective of vocation and purpose in full-time ministry. And just to clarify, my air quotes around full-time ministry earlier are certainly not intended to denigrate that work. I think all of us should be in full-time ministry, right? So that looks differently for all of us. Marietta?
So, answering the first question, how do I see my current vocation as being purposeful and fulfilling? I have long wanted my work to be something that has a lasting, eternal impact. And since the Bible is filled with verses that talk about God's heart and God's love for the poor, I find it fulfilling to join him in his passion for the needy. In 1 Corinthians 15:58, he says that our labor is not in vain in the Lord. Another way of saying this is I like having a tangible way to serve Jesus in the lives of the impoverished. Like Jesus said in Matthew 25, when we give food, drink, clothes, medical attention, friendship to strangers and visitation to prisoners, we're doing it to him, and he will remember it. He says we will receive an inheritance when we serve the poor in his name. Besides thinking about making Jesus happy, I find it very fulfilling to help move people from despair due to their isolation and instead instilling hope in them, while providing safety and security by joining them to community and the body of Christ. Again, I repeat that so often the root issues of brokenness in the people I meet are that they are lacking in community or have broken relationships. I am so privileged to connect them with somebody from Center or the other churches, or someone whom I've gotten to know in my Hutch networking. I'm going to give some examples of this. So, for example, housing. If I find someone who is homeless or about to be homeless with low income, I take them to Annette Boyer at the High Rise in South Hutch, or I contact landlords that I think would fit into what they can pay. Last January, a single mom of five children, whom I've known for more than 2 years, was evicted from her apartment. Naturally, that really bothered me. I was overjoyed when Annette found a spot for her in one of the apartments in the back. She is now in one of those cottages behind the high rise, doing very well. She meets with me almost weekly to give me an update about their general well-being. In addition to housing, another example of giving the poor community is by giving options for work. Last week, Jana and I met with a couple, and the man told us how his employment with a large corporation in Hutchinson was in jeopardy. He saw the handwriting on the wall that he was about to be laid off. So, just like so many other employees, I suggested he apply at Nisley Brothers. I saw the light come into his eyes as he exclaimed that he would do so that very day. I haven't had a chance to reach back and see if he did. Another example, on Monday of this week, I met with a father of an 8-year-old baby and a 3-year-old son. both sons. He was feeling such despair about not finding work, though he'd applied at 125 different places. His options were limited due to his poor choices in the past, in which he had his license revoked. But most discouraging is that the big companies outsource the applications so that HR, the HR in the community, in the company, never even sees his qualifications. And he loves working. He loves working hard. He was feeling so blue that he was threatening to go back to selling drugs. I seriously warned him that that is a thought straight from the enemy. And it's his way of tempting him in order to entrap him and then steal from him. I reminded him that in past months he'd been more interested spiritually in seeking God. And so, of course, the enemy was going to fight back hard against him. He had to admit I was right. I took him to Tyson's, where we talked to current employees who gave him the local numbers to call. And I also stopped at the Noel Lodge and talked to Kylie, who gave suggestions as well about work. By the end of the conversation, I was able to give him 5 more options about where he could find work. He had a smile on his face that day, but today I found out from his wife that he's so full of despair he's not actually even applied. So I would appreciate you really praying for him. They lost a baby girl, and that really continues to haunt him. So I don't know if that's why he's stuck right now. They lost a baby girl. Well, I'll come to that in the rest of my talk. So, and in addition to housing, options for work, a third way of providing connection to community is to suggest that they get help with mental illness, with the mental health issues. I refer them to Milestone Clubhouse on Main Street, where they can get have daily meaningful activities like learning how to cook and how to eat together and how to clean up afterwards. The meals only cost $1. I can also refer them to the Maria Magdalene Ministry on East 4th, where they can get free group counseling if there's family stress, or for $50 an hour, they can go deeper into personal counseling. A fourth way of being the gate that provides community is to help with work projects that are overwhelming for my needy friends, and that's where you come in. Saturday, I referred an 85-year-old woman to Nate Miller, Sarah's son, who will be doing her mowing for the summer. On Thursday, I referred another 85-year-old to Jonas's sister, Adeline, who will be weeding her flower beds and washing her windows. Last week, for 7 hours, Andrew helped a lady's son pull all her boxes, a washer and dryer, where everything had been kept in storage in Newton. Now that monthly bill of $70 has been eliminated. Since I see our society is dreadfully broken in connections, it makes me so happy when I can get people to know real people who care about them and not just depend on dogs and cats to be their emotional support. It makes me even happier when the people I have helped turn around and are willing to help me help somebody else. Last week, someone who moved here from Kansas City a year ago told me that she really likes living in the Hutchison community because the people are so warm and friendly. On Sunday, Brian talked about how we were created to rule on the earth. This vocation with Hands of Christ is my God-given task to see the advancement of Jesus' rulership in Hutchinson. I love the verses in Isaiah 61:3-4, where God prophesies that the released captives will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. Notice this, they will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities. I would call Hutchison ruin, would you too? For sure on Avenue A. That have been devastated for generations. There are so many broken down, empty buildings in Hutchison that reflect the broken, empty lives without Jesus and without being connected to his church. I pray that I can see with my own eyes God fulfilling that powerful promise in Hutchison. Finally, I find this vocation meaningful because I can serve the center church by being the point of connection between so many of you warm-hearted followers of Jesus who really want to love others practically and do help supply the very real needs that are in Hutchison. The second question that I want to answer that the committee had is, what is the role of joy in the work itself? The role of joy in vocation is very important. Maybe it's like a barometer to show if I'm balanced in my work. If joy is lacking and work becomes a drudgery, maybe I'm doing something I'm not designed for. Or maybe I'm overexerting myself by taking on too much responsibility for others. Or, here's a very real possibility, maybe I'm looking to people for my rewards instead of to God. Joy in the work is a confirmation that I'm where God wants me to be. I think of what Psalm 16:11 says, in your presence is fullness of joy. I feel a special joy when people are interested in talking about Jesus and learning about the Bible. Recently, when we met with someone who has colon cancer at 50 years old, and he has a 5-year-old and a 1-month-old to raise, he had such a beautiful attitude concerning his circumstances. He was grateful that God let this illness of cancer happen so that it brought him closer to God. Since prior to his illness, he was practically ignoring God. Lois and Marquita have offered to babysit his children while he goes to another city for cancer treatment. He was so appreciative of the help Hands of Christ is offering and so sweetly asked if there's anything they can do to help us. Another example of someone I met who has the joy of knowing Jesus intimately lost her only baby daughter one night. And that's the one whose husband I was helping find work. One night when her husband accidentally smothered the baby while sleeping. This mother's attitude is so beautiful. Far from being bitter at her husband, she's very grateful for God's presence in her life and now wants to attend church with us. In fact, she had hoped to come to Center last Sunday, but her little boys got sick. And obviously, it would be much easier if we could have church on Sundays out in town because they wouldn't have as far to go. Children of God who have his joy find each other, and then the joy contagiously grows. The next question that I'd like to address is the committee said we'd get bonus points for sharing struggles and finding peace or fulfillment in our vocational journey. In answer to that, I say it's hard when I meet with people who seem to want a handout without engaging in relationship. If I text them after helping them, asking how they are, they may not text back. It makes me feel used. I wonder how often in a day God feels that way. By huge contrast are those people who are deeply grateful. Recently, a woman thanked me 5 times in the same day for helping with her bill. And interestingly enough, she was the mother of siblings that John and Crystal took care of last month. Another woman popped up months after I'd helped her to text, "I know I keep saying it, but thank you for being in my life. I truly mean it." This is changing the subject a little bit, but furthermore, if I'm honest about other struggles in the vocation, it's not always easy when I can't find center people to help with the very real needs of people who don't have community like we do to care for them. And maybe the center people don't text me back when I ask. By contrast, it's such a comfort when people say yes, or if they can't, if they text me back saying, "Thanks for asking, it just doesn't work this time. However, I really am interested in helping. Please ask me again." It is also a great encouragement when people regularly give to the Blessing Fund in order to help in tough situations and ask how they can get involved. The fourth question, what is the role of gifting and natural or developed ability in vocation? Without gifting, certain vocations would be very burdensome and dull. For example, if I would have a repetitive office job where I wouldn't talk to people, I would wither very quickly. However, I have found that my gifting and skills were developed through past experiences in the various vocations I've had over the years, such as at Hillcrest as the social and activities director, at Tutwiler Prison for Women as a chaplain's assistant, at the Enrichment Center at Tech as the director, in Hutchinson as the director, and at the ER clinic in El Salvador as the Bible teacher / counselor / office manager. I learned so many things about working with people and how to be comfortable in my own skin, so that my present vocation feels like a joy-filled, good fit. Because in the past, I've worked with the elderly, the disabled, the incarcerated, the abused women, the Latins who struggle financially and have listened to many, many, many people tell their hurts in childhood, my heart is drawn to those same types of people in Hutchinson. Through the ministries I was involved in the past, I learned that everyone has a very interesting story to tell, and I want to hear it. The next question that I want to address that they had is, what is the role of sacrifice in vocation? In my vocation, the role of sacrifice is very important. I have to be flexible in order to meet the needs of those who call. For example, if someone has to be at court at 8 o'clock, I have to leave earlier than usual so that I can accompany them. Or if someone needs help with the dreaded task of getting rid of bed bugs, I have to get disposable clothes around and be willing to help, since somebody has to do it. And it's really hard to ask other people to do what I hate to do so much myself. Or if someone's electricity is about to be shut off, I need to squeeze in a meeting in an already full day. Here's the final question that I want to ask, that I want to answer this evening. What is the role of financial compensation in choosing a vocational path? Financial compensation is important because it does reflect the value placed on the work. I greatly appreciate and am deeply encouraged by how the Hands of Christ Board shows that they believe in and value this vocation. I thank God for them. I'm thinking about financial compensation, however, I would rather invest in a vocation obviously advancing Jesus' kingdom that gives lower pay than in a vocation that pays top dollars, but I don't feel Jesus' passion in it. In conclusion, whether finding meaning or joy in experiencing challenges and sacrifices or receiving compensation for my vocation in every aspect, I remember as God said to Abraham, "He is the exceeding great reward." It's a privilege to walk with him, to see him in daily encounters with the poor, and to have a tiny part in his restorative work, bringing all things together under Jesus' rule. I recognize the huge gap that exists between heaven's shalom and the brokenness in Hutch. Yet I'm encouraged to see his redemptive work in people reaching out with grace to touch people in pain and need.
Does anybody else want to stand up and you sing a song? Chorus? Okay, let's not sing a song. Let's just stand it up and stretch a little bit. Everybody reach for the sky. Okay, thank you. That's all. Well, I hope to have a little bit of interaction. If you're expecting me to do all the talking tonight, we might be heading home early. When I was given this, and I got most of the same questions asked, but I took a little bit more liberty to go off on tangents, and so I did find. In our Symbiz group, we read the book, The Sacredness of Secular Work. I found that very fascinating. I'm going to read two paragraphs to start off that I think kind of encapsulates the concept of the book. Genesis 2:15 says, God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. The word we translate as work in this verse is the same Hebrew word abad, I'm sure that's not correct, which is the same word we translate as worship in Exodus 3:12. So the point he's making is that our work, whether it is pouring concrete or hauling garbage, is our worship. And so it gives a different
That means that Adam and Eve were worshiping God not just when they walked in the garden or sang a song, also when they were working and dressing it. David, you're here. I'm going to say a quote that you said some time ago when you were preaching. He said, "Now the president of the United States can go on vacation for a week, and nobody ever notices. But if your trash man goes on vacation for a week, everybody notices." I would like to posit that the work that we do can be varied, but it can be very important. And I like to think that being a garbage man is a essential service. We are helping to take care of the creation that God has given us. I heard one time that one should be involved in the taking care of the basic needs of man, of food and shelter and clothing, that those are worthwhile occupations, and maybe some of the others are not. Now, some people would say, what about cheeseburgers and fries and coffee and Diet Coke? So you can kind of enlarge that a little bit, maybe. Now, Arnie Pinto, he is the leader of the local Christian Men's Business Breakfast Club that meets every 2 months for a breakfast and motivational talk. And one of the things he sends out in his email every time is, "We have men from all walks of life in the Christian Men's Breakfast Club, bankers, attorneys, laborers, business owners, politicians, and clergy. The only thing we have in common is the Lord." Oh, yes, and good food. And there's no membership fee. Breakfast is $5, which doesn't fully cover the cost of the food. We want you there. That's why meals are so inexpensive. Now, Arnie Pinto spent most of his working life at CHS, and it was later called Kansas Protein Food, and I've forgotten what the name was 100 years ago, but he worked there for many, many years. And about 25 years ago, I was talking to him, and he said, "Yeah, he got started in protein years and years and years ago," and he was there as an engineer. And he said when he was in school, one of his people told him, "Get into protein, liquor, or cosmetics. There is always going to be a demand for those things. People have to eat, they have to drink, and they have to look nice." Now, that was his comment. So I talked a little bit now already about vocation and purpose and how you see your vocation as being purposeful and fulfilling. So I'm not the only person who's here that goes to work every day. So tell me about your perspective. What is it about your job that you find purposeful or fulfilling? You didn't come just to hear me. Make a difference. Physical or emotional? Okay. Meeting the needs. Okay. I'm sorry? Okay. There are sometimes government regulations that have to be followed. And we want to help navigate those. Great.
One of the things that I enjoy is helping people keep their commitments in a way that
help people maintain their commitments and maintain dignity. Keep commitments and maintain dignity.
I like that we get to help people be more effective and improve their quality of life. And by being active in the marketplace, we have collisions with people that we would never interact with otherwise.
We have chances to interact with people. Tell us. Does God like to do things well? Does God take pleasure in doing things well? Is it okay if we take pleasure in doing things well? These are rhetorical questions, but what I want us to think about is that what was it that God said in Genesis after he had done the creation, after he had created the worlds?
It was good.
Did God need to do the creation? Did he need to create man? Okay. Well, my point is that he took pleasure in the creation. And I think it's okay that we take pleasure in the work that we do. Knisley Brothers employs various people in our area, and we provide a great environment. People are home every night. We have great teammates, great pay and benefit. I tell potential employees that I can't do anything about the smell of garbage, but I can provide a good environment with the team in a wholesome environment. Now, a colleague years ago who was somewhat younger than me said, he thinks that driving a garbage truck is just like playing a video game. You just get to move the handles and the machine does these things. And I don't know about that. I don't play video games much. But when the skies are blue and the grass is green and the sun is shining, I love driving a garbage truck and taking away other people's problems. So. I'm going to ask you guys more the questions that Marietta answered in what is the role of gifting and natural or developed ability or interests? How does that factor into vocation or choosing a vocation? Does that have anything to do with it? Okay, fitting the job, okay?
I think subconsciously or not, we are looking for our gifting to align with our vocation, but that doesn't always match our interests.
So are you saying we won't always like every day the same? So what if I get started down, I'm working at a job for 6 months, and I say, I don't like this job. When should I jump ship and go do something that I like to do?
A lot later than you think.
I recently, a few months ago, put an ad on Indeed, and for us older folks, Indeed is the help wanted ad in that we used to put in the newspaper. It's online now. I put an ad on Indeed for a part-time inventory clerk. And in less than 2 weeks, I had 106 applicants who thought, because of various reasons, that they were suited for the job. I, at random, well, almost at random, pulled a typical, I'm going to say this is a typical applicant who's wanting a part-time inventory clerk position to work in the shop and help keep computerized inventory of mechanics' parts. This person worked from May 2024 to September 2024, 5 months, at City Beverage. He worked at Elite Discovery in Phoenix, Arizona for 5 months. He worked at Pfizer and McPherson for 4 months. He worked as a forklift operator and a quality control specialist for about a year. He worked at a tree service for 1 year. He worked at Reno County for 5 months. And then to wind up his skills, he says, I'm self-motivated and a hard worker, et cetera, and I'm experienced with this and this and this. I take pride in working hard and am looking for, and I'm not making this up, long-term employment with a good company that provides competitive salary and benefits. So again, my question is, when do you decide that you should jump ship? And my goodness, time is flying. I'm going to leave that. You can talk about that afterwards. I want to say a couple other things. Recently, we were talking with Calvin and Rebecca, who went to Indonesia, and their son was interested in aviation. And I was talking to Steve Gosho, who runs he works at the Hutchinson Airport. He's got an airplane maintenance company there. And I told him about Evan, and that Evan, there's Calvin Rebecca's son, Evan, is interested in aviation. And so now, a few weeks ago, I found out that Evan is working part-time as a mechanics assistant working on airplanes. And he is just jumping up and down, and I'm excited for him that he's able to work in an industry that he has some interest in and might possibly be a long-term something. So I'm not poo-pooing the idea that you should not follow your interests. I am saying if the job that you take isn't the perfect job, be a little careful with Arlen. It might be okay to just stick it out a little longer. Finally, it's common for people to, in our culture, to move because of a job. It is more common in our communities to move because of family or churches. As an example, your ancestors who came from the old world to what is now the United States many years ago, did they come for economic reasons? For the most part, not. For religious reasons. And I'm not saying that that's the only reason. My time is up and I'm going to stop so I don't get extra points, I'm sorry to say. But continue the discussion. This isn't supposed to stop by the end here. So I appreciate your attentiveness and your contribution, so I'm done.
Well, thank you very much, Marvin and Marietta, for sharing with us this evening. And I hope that the conversation does continue, because we all spend our time doing something. And so thinking about how we do that and why, I think, is good exercise for us. So very much appreciate the time you've invested in and shared with us this evening. John, do you have a song for us?
Don't stand and sing the Lord's Prayer.
And this will be our dismissal as well.